If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
And I don't know. I don't care if you're 18. I don't care if you're 40. You know, start early. You know, time. We know that compounding works best when you have a long run, a long long time frame to continue to compound that money you've invested. So start the early you get on it, the better.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
We are joined today by Bill Zahler and Richard Coyne from Park Capital Partners. Now, you guys are based where? In North Carolina?
That's right.
Fantastic. Can you guys give us just a brief bio on each of yourselves and kind of, you know, just give us a brief rundown of who you guys are?
Yeah, sure. I'll start and then Bill jump in. Richard Coyne, I just decided about 5 years ago that I wanted to kind of do something for wealth building for myself, my family. I had a W-2 job at the time. I've since retired from that. And the idea was to really kind of do something that would help me build some wealth and income. You know, I dug into a lot of different things, did a lot of research, a big believer in education, bought a single family on a short sale. And then I realized, wait a minute, one at a time, that's not going to get me where I want to go. So I said, okay, I realized I got to go bigger. Met Bill along the way, and then we started doing apartment deals.
Absolutely. My name is Bill Zahler. Been in real estate probably since about the mid-2000s, around 2004 through 2005 timeframe. Started like most people do, like in single family properties. Would basically buy one or build it, move into it, get the good debt and terms on them, and then move on to the next one and collected a few of them that way. I think I had around 9 properties out in the Southwest, lived out in the Scottsdale, Phoenix area. And enjoy that. But like as Richard said, you know, you start running the numbers and figure out the scale you're going to have to do to make that truly a viable enterprise and business to transition from your current job. And in my case, I'm a pilot. I've been for 30 years now, ever since high school. So just trying to work on that way. So always a fan of large numbers and just got more into it and dug deeper into how we can make this actually a real business. In 2016, started Park Capital Properties, and Richard and I teamed up, started Park Capital Partners, and have been doing the syndication model ever since.
So you got involved, Bill, in real estate in 2004, but you really didn't start buying larger assets until 2016?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, that's awesome. And are you still flying as a day job right now?
I am, yes.
Wow. So you guys have a lot going on.
We do.
Yeah, but it works out well. Like, you know, with as much as everybody's figured out recently with the COVID situation, you do a lot on at home. And when I'm on the road, take the laptop, the cell phone can do, you know, 95% of the stuff we need to do remotely. So,
right. So walk us through the evolution of your guys' business, how you guys teamed up as partners. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't like this one day you're like, oh, voila, Park Capital Partners. And now we own apartment complexes. And look, this is the guy I want to work with. And I mean, how did all that happen?
I think we actually were kind of on independent paths for a bit, of course, until we met each other. But I was really, again, once I made the decision to go toward real estate, I started digging into things and I discovered our local RIA. And the very first meeting I went to, I met Bill. Mm. You know, we didn't know we were going to be partners at the time. But, you know, a couple months later down the road, and once I realized, man, I got to go bigger, faster, I remember, wait a second, Bill was interested in apartments too. So he and I spent some time together, got to know each other better, realized that we have very similar goals, very similar objectives, even the same sense of humor, similar sense of humor at least. And so we said, let's work together. So we just jumped right in. We just said, okay, let's, you know, I had looked at a property and Bill, and I said, you know, hey, Bill, let's just go ahead and put an offer in on this thing. And, you know, thank good we didn't get it because we didn't, you know, there were a lot of things we missed in terms of our analysis. But again, we just said, we're going to go for it. Let's go for it.
So when you say that there were things you missed, what were some of those things?
I think the main thing in that particular deal were the demographics in the general vicinity. You know, you obviously have to have an average household income in the area, the 1-3-5 mile radius, at least the 1-3 that supports the ability to push rents. You know, with a 3x multiplier, you know, if a family's, you know, barely able to afford, you know, $900 a month, how am I going to push the rents to 1,000, you know, kind of thing. So, you know, we follow a value add model. And that's certainly part of it. Obviously, we you know, add value to the apartment, but correspondingly, we also increase the rents and things like that. And obviously, you know, if a family can't qualify, well, then that's just not going to work.
Right, right. That's interesting. So how did you guys decide, and maybe Bill, you can answer this, how did you guys build the structure out of the gate? I mean, so you're going to look at these deals. I mean, what was the discussion like as it surrounded that?
Richard and I decided we wanted to work together, and like we similar backgrounds and on the, as far as the underwriting and the path we were progressing down. We ended up, I don't know if you know this or not, but our first deal we took down was 216 units, was first multifamily we closed up, and no one told us we could. So we didn't know any better. And
you don't know what
that
you
sometimes
don't know.
Helps. Exactly. Right. Yeah. And that's it. I mean, truly, I mean, if there's anything, I know we may get to that later, but if there's any really takeaways, you know, I've always been good. Richard's always been good at, you know, rote memorization, memorizing, reading stuff, getting up to speed on things, but you really don't know what you don't know until you get into it. You do all the studying, but there's, you know, the analysis paralysis. At some point, if you want to be in it, you just have to move forward and you learn. I mean, everybody makes different mistakes, different things. We're big believers in learning from other people's mistakes to shorten that curve. And also education, like initially out of the gate, I joined a mentor program too, to again, shorten that learning curve and kind of speed things up for us.
Right, right. So you acquired a 216 unit apartment. And is that a deal you guys still own to this day?
We sold it last quarter or end of third quarter last year.
Congrats. That's great. Congrats, I guess. I hope so.
Absolutely. Yeah. It turned out really well. And that was even despite COVID. You know, we projected an 18 IRR on a 5-year hold, and we beat a 22 IRR.
Wow. Good for you guys. That's great. Yeah. Those are ones you should be proud of. And so what does your portfolio look like today?
Today we have, we're totally invested, just the math second, about 1,365 units total we have investments in, and then we're KP on around 600 units.
Okay. Okay. Now that's awesome. So you're adding right now, you know, roughly 250 units a year. I guess probably more than that even.
We bought and sold some. So yeah, in the mix, we'd like to, you know, the goal is 3 to 4 properties a year.
Okay. That's super cool. So as you guys have scaled, give us some lessons or some things you did right along the way. Like, what are some successes you had that you said, man, those are things that somebody else should be repeating?
I'll throw out a couple. And out of the gate, Bill and I were instantly taken seriously by anybody and everybody we ever talked to. And I say that as a distinguishing factor because, you know, sometimes you have somebody that calls up a broker and says, hey, I want to buy 100 units. And then the broker goes, okay, show me proof of funds kind of thing, you know, type of a deal. And you know, we never in all of our conversations at the beginning, we were ever questioned. And there were a lot of reasons for that. The reasons were, we knew what we were talking about. We knew the language. We carried ourselves professionally. You know, we always dressed up and always showed up in suits, not a tie, but a suit. You know, we just looked professional. And we took it very seriously. And we had also a very deliberate plan of really, you know, getting our name out there to really meet brokers, meet property managers, you know, build our extended team even before we had a deal. And that really helped really set a stage for, you know, us to be taken seriously like from day one.
Absolutely. I would just add to that, you know, we put the effort in also. We never, you know, continuous improvement, but we'd get in a car and we wanted to be in Atlanta. We'd drive to Atlanta. We'd set up multiple meetings with different brokers throughout the day. And that led to our first deal. We just happened to drive by a property that we knew one of the brokers we'd met a couple of months earlier, happened to see him giving another tour and called him up at lunch. And we were able to go back out there and came up a way to actually preempt the full call for offers on that one. Right. So,
wow, that's really cool. Something that you'd said, Richard, was you said, Bill, one of the things you did was, you know, obviously you knew the language. And the second thing you said was that you built your extended team before you actually needed them. Mm-hmm. What's a strategy for that? I mean, just talk to us about that if you can, and maybe elaborate on that point.
Yeah, I think, you know, certainly as you're going out and trying to meet brokers, you know, you can talk to them and say, hey, listen, who's a great property management company that you would recommend in the area? And we reached out and talked to property management companies. So that was, again, you know, when we're, you know, 100 plus doors, we're not going to be taking the calls at 2 a.m. You know, that's our professional property manager. And on top of that, you're not going to get, you know, either investors or a bank to take you seriously if you're going to say out of the gate, oh, I'm going to manage this 150 units by myself.
Right.
Well, they're going to laugh you out of the room. So, you know, so meeting property management was certainly very important very early. And I think, again, it's just, you know, you start assembling the people that you know where you're going to be depend upon. You know, obviously you got to have legal advisors behind the scenes. You have to have insurance, you know, people. So we just, you know, just start reaching out and making those connections. And, you know, that's what we did.
And when you are building out these relationships with the property management team and people like that, I guess, what are some things like, did you, you know, the first deal, how did you finally select that person to say, yeah, this is the right company we're moving forward with? And I guess, how did you vet those partners? Because I think for me, I feel like you can make a lot of different connections out there, but you really don't know who you're dealing with until you really get them in the game. And then you figure it out. And so were there some mistakes made along that path?
Well, some of it, I think, too, on that is as you're building it, we looked for common themes or common names. So we would ask multiple brokers, property management, and if the same name keep coming up for this asset, this area, this type, who would you recommend? And I think it was two or three, and the one was common in that. That kind of would rise to the top on that. And then, you know, just a feeling, you know, we'd look at their other properties, we'd hear their plan for how they'd run our property. And just kind of, you know, want to make sure we get a good feel for the, you know, the president of the company or whoever we were dealing with initially that. So, and the same thing when we talked to them, we'd ask them about, you know, different brokers we should know. And as, you know, they kind of would say, these guys handle what you're looking for value add in this market. So, you know, kind of just cross-referencing that kind of built that a little faster from kind of vetting some of the ones that didn't show up on multiple radars.
Right. No, that's absolutely great. That's a good point, because you can cross-reference those, ask the brokers, and the brokers tell you the property manager, and the property manager tell you the brokers to go to. And it's that's a great key point. What are some things you guys have done, or maybe we'll ask this two ways, things you would either do differently or mistakes that you've made in your journey?
Ooh, good question. You know, I guess probably, you know, maybe a mistake that, you know, maybe we made early on was perhaps, you know, not maybe building out as much of an investor network as we could have early on, you know, in terms of the type of people we know that would be in, you know, want to be part of a deal like we started out with. You know, it's certainly, you know, that's the key. You know, it's definitely, you can find a deal. Well, that's hard these days, but you know, certainly obviously finding a deal, but if you don't have the folks that are willing to come on board with you, you know, it gets difficult to figure out, okay, can we actually pull this off? So certainly that's been a major focus of ours since the first deal, to continue to build that network of folks, you know. And it's obviously lots of different types of outreach that we knew that are part of that, but it's certainly something that, you know, if we could have changed the beginning, maybe had a little more of that, you know, defined and enabled, then that would have been something I'd say. Yeah.
Was there ever a deal that you had to pass on that you would have taken down, but you just didn't have the capital to get it done?
No.
Not once we committed.
Right. Yeah. Not once you committed, but maybe was there everything like you, that you were nervous about, like, oh man, I wonder if we can get this done. It's a great deal, but never committed to doing it.
Well, $100 million deals. We kind of look at that and go, dang, that's a nice property, but oh, can we really pull that one off? You know?
Right. Yeah. There's always always that trepidation. Bill, how would you answer that, that question?
I would say it's similar. Yeah. The main thing we noticed, we think the underwriting process we had that we, and, you know, currently we have our lead VP of acquisitions. He has an institutional background, has worked on Wall Street, you know, has a deep background, worked in a family office, a deep background in underwriting. So we think underwriting side, we think we operate the properties well. But the main friction of any of that, I think in the beginning, especially would have been like the equity raise. Mm-hmm. So I think the same thing was, we would have started, you know, a podcast earlier, been more active in the blogging, that kind of stuff, just to build a presence. We think we had a good product. We think we had a good plan. It's just not enough people knew about it, I think, initially. But now we have a little more of a story to tell with round tripping a few deals, and it's kind of scaling it from here.
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely a great point. So what are some things that you guys have done to increase your investor network?
Well, certainly, you know, just continuous reach out to folks that we've met. We talk to investors, current investors, obviously expose them to the new opportunity to see if they want to come on board. And many of our deals, many of our investors have, in fact, come, you know, been repeat investors. Mm. You know, we also are, you know, we take a Kaizen approach where we kind of try to continuously improve. So we're right now, we're redoing our website and getting that ready to release in the next little bit. And then, you know, we're launching a podcast of our own. You know, we're certainly trying to leverage that, and then, you know, outward reach marketing and, you know, trying to contact people and continue to build our connections.
And we also have two meetup groups we run every month. Also, we have the Asheville Multifamily Investor Club we run, and we also run a multifamily branch for the local Korea. So again, just more meetings, we can kind of grow the network and add value to the community.
Right, right. No, that's super cool. And that's one of those things that, you know, we lost a lot of in 2020 was a lot of that face-to-face, you know, investor networks. How did you guys deal with that?
We switched immediately to Zoom sessions. We didn't miss a beat. And, you know, certainly something where, you know, like Bill mentioned earlier, he's used to being able to, you know, when he's on the road working, you know, he has a laptop, he opens that up on his cell phone, he can keep going and still doing business. And that was how I operated as well. I've been used to being a, you know, a remote person for the last 15 plus years. And now that's, you know, so the technology enablement that is there to allow you to do that. So certainly, you know, the RIA arranged for Zoom sessions, and Bill and I pivoted immediately and went to Zoom for our for the Asheville Multifamily Investor Club meetings. And you know, and quite honestly, in a way, it's actually been, you know, kind of a nice twist, because guess what? Because it's not an in-person meeting, we can have somebody that lives in Texas be a guest on one of those sessions. So that's actually been, in a way, a nice twist. So yeah,
there are some advantages to that that we've seen through all of this. Some shifts in technology that have actually produced some beneficial results. Bill, you're a pilot, and pilots love checklists. You know, it's one of the things that we use to mitigate risk, is to go down the checklist and say, okay, these are everything's lined out, we're ready for takeoff. So tell us, but within that, obviously being a pilot has its own inherent risks. So what are some things that you see are risks that you guys do in your business, and how do you guys mitigate them?
Well, I thought a recent deal, then what we closed on one also the end of third quarter last year, we took down into Greenville, South Carolina. And it was during COVID, so there's a lot of, you know, and, it, you know, again, talking to even, you know, the smart money, hedge funds, all those guys, and Wall Street, it was kind of divided. You know, half the guys were staying put, half the guys were going all in, so there was no consensus. We know the area well. We thought the plan was good, but to mitigate some of the risk, to your point, we like underwrote no rent growth for the year one, and very minimal year two. Year three started to get back to a little more. It wasn't year four till we got to more normalized rent growth. We pushed the renovation schedule, just again hold cash flow to get through it in case we need it. We've got a large, you know, close to $1 million CapEx budget to flow through. We pushed that basically 2 quarters into the future before we started renovations. So, and then we slowed it from a 2-year process to getting all 120 units done to over about a 3.5-year process. Again, just a little slower, more deliberate. We don't want to have high vacancy. We want to control that. We want to control the cash flow. So all the, and, you know, I got a floating debt on that with a cap that's fixed. So we can unwind any position that, you know, very small, there's no defeasancy, any kind of fees like that on the exit. So just different ways to kind of figure out what the long term is.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, all of those are, one, they are very conservative, and that's awesome to hear. How do you, I guess you just found the right deal. I guess that's it, because what we're seeing is that once you underwrite something so conservatively, it no longer pencils out. So I guess you guys, I mean, the answer is you just found the right deal, and it's still penciled.
And the right time. So I think if it'd been 6 months, if it'd been now, we couldn't have got the deal for the same price we got it back then. I think there was a fear factor still in the market. We knew it was a good deal to proceed. We knew what our underwriting was and how many different fronts were conservative on that. And we felt comfortable going forward. I think the bidding pool is much tighter right now.
Right. Yeah, that's awesome. Richard, you got any thoughts on that other than what Bill shared?
No, I think that's a great summary that Bill shared. And again, just to emphasize the timing, you know, that market came on that deal we closed in August came on the market in probably April. I want to say we went under contract at the end of June. Mm. And so, you know, the initial shock factor of March was over. People realized, okay, it isn't something that we're, you know, where the world's going to end. But again, we still had to take that conservative approach, and you know, you know, we're still being conservative about it. We actually have had a great outcome in the fact that we're actually already able to push our market rents right now, and you know, all of our in that particular property, all of our new leases are at or above market. So you know, it's turned out well, and that conservativism I think is going to pay off for the investors.
Right. That's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. Very great. Gentlemen, let's jump into the final four here if we can. Mm-hmm. We'll just ask each question independently, and then you guys can answer them you know, as we go through the list. So question number one is, what is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
I would say start early, you know, and I don't care if you're 18, I don't care if you're 40, you know, start early. You know, time, we know that compounding works best when you have a long run, a long, you know, long time frame to continue to compound that money you've invested. So start the early you get on it, the better.
Yeah. And I would say just two part, I guess. One is get educated, but the continuing education, I think, is critical. Don't ever just want to rest or think you know it all. There's always something to learn. There's a million different ways to do real estate. So continue education, but at some point, also hand in hand with that, is you have to actually pull the trigger at some point. You can't just study the market forever and ever, and then nothing ever happens and 10 years gone by. So get educated, continue to educate, and then actually get involved if you want to.
That's right. What is one thing you are currently doing to stay on top of your game?
I would say we're just always hunting, always looking, always continuing to you know, see what's out there and look to try to find a way to make that deal work. I mean, again, we have to take a conservative approach to protect our investors and also to manage expectations. But at the same point in time, we do want to be active. So, but at the same point in time, you know, you just have to be smart about it. So.
And we brought on a few people recently to expand as we grow our team to free up Richardize time for more of the overall strategy of the company, the growth that way. So we'll take care of our investors and then continue to grow.
Yeah, and bringing people on, that absolutely helps you stay on top of your game. Because otherwise, I mean, to your point, like you can get lost in the weeds really fast because there's about 18 different hats you can wear in the multifamily industry. And you just have to be selective about the ones you wish to wear. So good for you guys. When it comes to giving back, what is one way you're making the world a better place?
Well, certainly, I think the way I'll answer that is actually through the properties. You know, we have a mission and a goal that says, listen, we're going to do great things for our investors. But at the same point in time, we want to leave a property better than when we found it. Mm. And I'll give you an example. Our first property that we mentioned, we have now sold. That property was, you know, it had been a bit neglected by the prior owner. And we had people that were moving out. And then, you know, 6 months in, some of those people moving out said, well, wait a second. I see you guys are spending money. You're making this a better place. We like this location. We love it here. We like our neighbors, et cetera. You know, I'm going to go ahead and stay. So they renew their leases. You know, again, it's awesome to hear that. But that's something that's really important. We want to obviously, you know, apartments are the residents' homes, you know, so we want to do right by them and make sure it's a great place to live.
Right.
Absolutely. In addition to that, you know, other than being involved in local charities and our church, also we do a lot of mentoring as far as through the meetup groups. So we're always trying to, you know, help educate somebody when they get into business, kind of, you know, let them see any blind spots they might have and try to help. You know, people helped us when we started out. We want to continue to pass that forward.
Oh, that's really cool. That's really cool. So do you guys have a mentorship program for people getting in the space, or is this just something you do when people approach you and say, hey, you know, I want to bounce some questions off of you?
That's mainly the feedback from some that there's several people in our multifamily groups that will reach out to us to get our feedback on deals or, you know, something they're looking at. And we're more than happy to spend time helping them.
Right. No, that's great. That's great. And certainly have been helped out along the way by many, many other people that have also paid it forward. And that's really great that you guys are doing that. Bill and Richard, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. Our website is parkcapitalpartnersllc.com. You can also reach us, find us on LinkedIn. Also, Bill, what are the other mediums?
We have Facebook, the Park Capital Partners, and also, Park Capital Partners, basically, and then LinkedIn. Bill Zahler, Richard Coyne, both have profiles on there, also the Park Capital Partners profile.
And coming soon, our show or podcast will be coming out, so that'll be another way to connect with us as well.
Do you have a name picked out for that yet?
We do. It's the Road Less Traveled Show.
Okay, look forward to it. Be on the lookout for the Road Less Traveled Show, forthcoming. Richard and Bill, thanks so much for your time today. Certainly appreciate it. I really enjoyed every bit of this.
Sam, thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Yep, thanks, Sam. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the